record aficionados. 103.3 FM, and everybody's putting on headphones, and like, whoa, these people like prep for a show. They've got like notes. This is crazy. All right, so I'm gonna slide the fader up. You're gonna listen to some automation, and then we're all gonna get smart and informed with Cindy.
Good morning, and welcome to Inside Petaluma. I'm co-hosting. I'm Cindy Thomas with my friends Jason Davies and Janice Cater Thompson. Good morning, you guys.
Good morning.
Okay.
Good morning, Petaluma.
Yeah.
It's actually late morning. Was it early afternoon? Pre-noon.
Brunch time.
Yeah.
Okay, we got a big list of things to talk about today, and I'm certain we're not going to get through all of them, but we were talking before we came in, and we were thinking maybe you wanted to know a little bit about us and why we're here talking to you every Friday at 11 o'clock.
Sure. Let's find out more about us.
Yeah.
Or maybe not.
This will be the test to see how well we know ourselves, perhaps.
Yeah.
You want to start, Cindy?
Yeah, well, okay. Real briefly, let's see. I moved to Petaluma in 91 because I was a Marin County native who was tired of development and traffic, so Petaluma was a great place to land until I started seeing that it was starting to happen here also. So in 2002, I ran for city council, lost by less than 100 votes there, and wasn't giving up. Did it again in 2004, lost again with less than 100 votes, and lost by less than 100 votes, not just had 100 votes. But anyway, I've stayed active in the community. Currently, I am retired from Kaiser Permanente after 25 years and devoting a lot of time here at PCA and KPCA. That's it in a nutshell. I don't want to get too far into it, but that's a pretty round version of it.
And you're currently the chair for PCA.
Yeah, I sit on the board of directors for PCA. I have for the last 17, 18 years, and yes, I am the board chair. Yeah.
That's great. And under your direction, there's now a radio station that allows us to do what we're doing right now.
Yep.
Good work, Cindy.
Executive Director John Bertucci and I have fought for over 10 years to get the low-power FM license, and by golly, we did it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
So now that I have the radio station here, you can tell us all about you, Jason.
Oh, I'm next. Okay. No problem. So I'm a San Francisco Bay Area native, grew up in Palo Alto, was growing up around the same time Apple was starting, so I got really into computers when I was a kid, also very interested in music. I went to UC Santa Cruz, and I majored in politics with double major in environmental studies. Considered going into environmental law or urban planning. Got a little sidetracked with my passion for music and ended up in a music technology career. And I've been in that for quite a while. That's what originally brought me to Petaluma. There was an opportunity here. But I've been here now since 2000 and care a lot about this city. Me and my wife have raised two kids that are growing up here, and we just love the town, and obviously want to make sure that that we keep it nice. Having grown up in Palo Alto, I certainly don't want to see that sort of a change in this town. So I'm a staunch advocate of protecting the environment that we've got and advocating for sustainable development here in our town. I did run for city council a little while ago, and I wasn't successful, but had a great time doing it, learned a lot, and continue as I can to be engaged within the confines of having a busy business and family life and occasional music life.
Okay. Yeah.
A little bit about me.
Yeah, that's interesting enough. So I saved Janice for last because she's got the longest resume, I'm pretty sure, and an interesting one at that. You want to tell us about you, Janice?
Sure. Well, I am basically a native Petaluman. My grandparents both, Seth, immigrated in 1919 and 1913. I'm part of the Fishman family. My mom was a fisherman, and my dad is a caterer. My parents actually went to high school together, and after World War II, my dad decided he wanted to get married, and he called Selma Cater up, and 6 months later, they were married. And that's kind of the history of my mom and dad, even though...
Cold call, huh?
Well, one thing that happened is they were married for 3 months before they told their parents, because they were kind of different people on different sides of the track. They both came from Jewish backgrounds, but one was more communist, and the other one was definitely capitalist. So I have definitely a different background growing up in our community. As far as myself, I went to Petaluma High. I'm married. I have three daughters who went through the Petaluma school system. One lives in Davis and has two daughters, and the other two live in Petaluma. And I actually have six grandchildren.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a busy life. And it's great. My 10-year-old granddaughter is very political. And she always looks out for my best interests.
So I see the Cater name quite a bit around town, and that's your family,
that's
right?
That's my family.
Wow.
My dad's father, Morris and Mary, they originally lived where Schulenberger Park is. That was their property, and there was a tallow plant down there. And so that's hence Cater Lane.
Uh-huh.
And I actually have pictures. My grandmother was a horse rider, and they would go horseback riding down there. And I have a great picture of my grandparents by this little house that they lived in for a short time right by the river.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, kind of exciting. And so then what happened with the Cater side, they ended up moving into town.
Mm-hmm.
And during the Depression, they actually built the house on C and 7th Street, the brick one.
Wow.
And there's a turret, you know, and my grandmother would sit up there and dry her hair. Unfortunately, they died in 1963 and 1965. Mm-hmm. I have fond memories of staying in the house, and it was really, they were great grandparents. And then on my mom's side, the Fishman side, they were chicken ranchers, and they were the communist side, according to my dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we just had a very close family relationship with them. I'm very close with my cousins today.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, so it was a good life. You know, growing up in Petaluma, it would be, you know, a Thursday, and you decided to go, you know, go visit your family. You'd just get in the car, and you'd drive over there, and, you know, they'd have coffee. The kids would go outside and play. And that was pretty much our life growing up.
So Neil Fishman is one of your cousins.
Neil Fishman is my cousin. His father, Saul, and my mother were brother and sister.
So we served together on PCA for a little while.
That's
great,
right.
Great guy.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
He was the treasurer?
He was the treasurer on our board of directors,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Really, well, Neil and his wife, Maxine, worked for Coastal Conservancy.
Uh-huh.
And so then they moved back here about 10 years ago. And it's been a real pleasure having them back. And, you know, when we're talking about projects and stuff and the importance of actually connecting people together, Neil and Maxine working for Coastal Conservancy, at the time I was on the city council and really wanted to build a wastewater plant that was a sustainable wastewater plant, which meant you had polishing ponds, not just, you know, regular mechanical plant, because this is, you know, you have recycled water. And that was pretty much the point of doing the type of plant that we have. And I brought Neil and Maxine down there, and because if we didn't buy this property, the plant would never have been built the way it is today.
Right.
Which actually added about 2 miles of trails from Schollenberger Park. Mm-hmm. And it's about an 8-mile trek, you know, back and forth from Sheraton to the wastewater plant. And what people don't realize, the wastewater plant is actually an artistic piece.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it really is, because it's shaped like the salt harvest mouse.
I never knew that.
And then the butterfly, monarch butterfly, which is native to the area, is also folded into the design. And so it's really pretty cool. And if anybody ever wants to take a tour down there, I'd be happy to take them on a tour and show them all the different aspects of where the antennas are, where the mouse's tail is, where the nose of the mouse is. And
this is a wastewater treatment plant.
This is a wastewater treatment plant.
You know, it doesn't sound like the most inviting place to go check out, but it really is quite nice. The trails are beautiful.
It's multi-use.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's a multi-use plant.
Well, the thing is that it was, I went to Arcata, and I had a tour. Dan Hauser, I think, was the mayor of Arcata at the time. I went and called him up because I was camping up there. And he took me on a tour of the Arcata wastewater plant, which was similar to this, but of course ours is more of a hybrid. And that's how it got started.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing. I mean, I was on the council when it got it started. We got the land because we knew people at Coastal Conservancy, but more importantly, it was a really good project why we got the money.
Yeah.
Now that wasn't a unanimous decision, was it?
It was not, it was and it wasn't. There was a group on the city council that wanted to go mechanical, and Brian Moynihan was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Healy basically said if you can get the land, then he would go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always, you know, he always gives you, you know, something you have to do if you want something. And I think they were surprised that you got the money for the land.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so and, you know, this many years later, they're still upgrading the plant. And it's actually... A world-renowned artist helped design it. There are books about it, written up about it.
And as I understand it, it can be upgraded, if we so choose, for tertiary treatment, where you could even, in a time of need, you could even drink that water.
You could. That's exactly right. I'm not sure if any of us are quite ready to go there, but you could drink the water.
Well, you know, with global warming and more droughts, it might be something that a lot of municipalities have to consider, and at least we have that option to expand it for that capability.
That's right. And part of the reason with the polishing ponds is the metals go to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
They drop to the bottom because that water in the wintertime is actually put into the river.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really important that people understand that the water that we are putting into the river as a city is clean water.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a good thing to know because I actually fell in the river about a year ago and actually went all the way under, head under. Didn't get sick at all.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I tell people that story, and they're like, ew, gross. Did you get out alive? I mean, obviously, I got out alive. I'm talking, but no illness. It's really not that bad. I'm not suggesting people drink that water. But mostly what people see in it is, it's a tidal slough, and
That's
a lot
correct.
Of muck and silt, and which is another topic. The whole idea of dredging that has been a big challenge for Petaluma. As we all know, it's technically not a river. As I just said, it's a tidal slough. But it was called a river, so we qualify for dredge funding from the Army Corps of Engineers. But as we know, it's been difficult to obtain those funds. Yeah, it's tricky. I see boaters trying to navigate through it, and it's getting harder and harder every year.
Well, part of the reason it's harder to get money, there's, you know, the federal government is tightening up.
Yeah.
But besides that, you have to have so much tonnage on the river. And if you don't have enough tonnage, they're not looking at you as a real viable candidate. Mm-hmm. And that's really the problem. We've had the biggest companies leave. And so there's not a real reason why they feel like they need to come in and spend, you know, $6 million to dredge. And then the other thing is it'll be interesting when they eventually dredge to find out where the spoils are, because that's what they call the dredging of the spoils. Because Schollenberger Park was actually the spoils pond.
Yeah.
And that's what people don't quite understand is why the water dries up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because it's basically just a dam.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so in the spoils ponds are filling up there, but you also have the the pickled what is it, salt harvest mouse like to eat, the pickleweed.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I love that stuff.
They
on
love
a salad.
It.
It's really good.
Well, and so since the pickleweed is in there, it's harder to get permits to put more spoils in there, because it's a special plant. And since the salt harvest mouse is endangered, it all ties together.
Now, when you're qualifying for dredge funding, do they take into account the impact on tourism? Because I know that's a big point. I mean, we have a lot of boaters coming from San Francisco Bay and the Delta. They'll come in up the Petaluma River, spend the weekend, visit the restaurants, spend their money here. Does any of that count?
That doesn't count.
Ah.
It's all about tonnage and business.
Yeah.
And that's really what the emphasis is, because you have all these other areas, even around here, that need dredging. And would they do Petaluma first, or are they going to go down to Oakland or other areas where they need dredging in there?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Tricky one.
It is a tricky one.
So that's why I saved Janice for last, because I just wanted everybody to hear what she's just an encyclopedia of Petaluma information.
You could write a book.
And the fact that what I admire about you is that you, after you left the council, you didn't stop. You continued being knowledgeable in all the policy and politics of this town, and that's what I feel makes you really valuable on this program.
My opinion is you never lose an election. You only lose when you decide not to stay engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And I say the same thing about the two of you. I was going to say the same thing to you.
Yeah.
Stick together. But we've really worked on our community. We care about the community, and we're not just sitting back doing nothing.
And, you know, I never considered us as losers. We're winners because our voice is actually stronger on the side of the dais that we're sitting on now.
I'm pleased to say that when I did run, I had a lot of great support, and all my contributions came from small local donors. In fact, I think in the last election I ran, I actually had the highest percentage of local donations for that race. And that's really important when you're looking at these candidates, to consider, you know, where their values are and where the influence is, and really ultimately, whether they're looking out for you or perhaps other interests. And it's really healthy as a voter to go to the city website when those reports come out, because you can actually look at all of the, fortunately, because of all the campaign finance laws, all that stuff has to be reported. So you can actually connect the dots, and you can see you know, where money comes from and how that can have a correlation to decisions on the council.
Yeah. And we have a website that we're putting together, and we're going to put links up there for you, and as soon as that happens, we'll let you know, and there'll be all kinds of ways that you can go and look at, see what the candidates are up to.
I think one thing to look at is sign locations. When you see those big signs on a certain developer's property, you know that developer is supporting them, and when they are supported by that developer, you are obligated to vote and in support of their projects.
Right.
I mean, it's really unfortunate, but that is a fact, because I've heard this from the developer, so it's not a made-up story.
And you can look at the way people vote based on where their support comes from. It's not a coincidence when you see those, particularly on undeveloped properties that are you know, maybe poised for some type of development. And, you know, I understand being a businessman, you know, you're always trying to pay as little as possible and have as much profit. That's kind of the nature of business. So I don't fault them for that, but at the same time, we hope that the people we elect are stewards of the public interest and that they put that first. And that means, you know, if there's a development that's going to be put in, what about bike paths? You know, what about solar panels? You know, what about all of these things that make them more sustainable?
Right. And we got labeled, all three of us would get labeled all the time as being anti-development.
Yep.
We were totally against development.
Yes.
When, in fact, we are for development, but responsible development.
That's right.
Responsible development that, that benefits the community
yep.
and not the wallets of the ones that are padding
yep.
these campaigns.
Well, and it's also really looking at, when you're looking at building a community, when you have a community that's as old as Petaluma, you have to really worry about the roadways. How much traffic are we expecting these mm-hmm. roads to take? And my thing is always with the Deer Creek and the Target Shopping Center.
Yeah.
I knew those shopping centers were going to come.
Mm-hmm.
And Deer Creek, I'm happy to be living next to Deer Creek. I don't have a problem with that. The problem I have is the 18-wheeler trucks that are actually tearing up the roadway
mm-hmm.
because of all the deliveries to the site.
I'm glad you brought up Deer Creek because I think it's important that we reflect a bit on how that development happened, because there were a lot of concessions ultimately made by the developer, maybe not as many as we would have liked. I personally was an advocate of Alternative C, which was the more environmentally superior alternative in the EIR, which would have had less retail there, but we would have still had a Freedman's and a skilled nursing center, which actually makes a lot of sense, particularly for that region, and also based on the demographics. I mean, we're expected to have a lot more older people here that are going to need those kinds of services. But mm-hmm. I recall that the council, at least the majority at the time, didn't seem to be pushing for as many concessions and mitigations. And you were pretty instrumental in pushing for that. As just a private citizen, you went to bat. And I believe as a result, wasn't there some fencing that was put in and some crosswalks and things?
We had, we decided to work together because it was a lot easier than working apart.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we got for the neighborhood was new fencing. I have to say I'm not happy with the quality of the fencing. That's a disappointment, you know, things that you learn along the way.
Right.
And that's partly because the city really didn't participate, and the city should have really participated with the citizen
mm-hmm.
to make it a better project.
Mm-hmm.
We got crosswalks, lit crosswalks that are used. A lot of people go and use the dog park all the time. So you're seeing a lot more activity in a neighborhood. And that's the value of the Deer Creek Center, is that you see this activity that you didn't see before.
You had to fight for that dog park, didn't you?
No, the dog park was never really a fight for the dog park. And I have to say, Diane Riley Torres was really instrumental in the dog park, and I want to give her kudos for that.
Okay.
But I mean, we definitely worked together, and I talked to the property owner
mm-hmm.
or dear, you know, Merlin Geyer, and they were happy to put the dog park in. The dog park is actually supposed to be the off ramp if there's ever one, if Rainier is built, which.
Yeah.
Everybody knows there's not going to be on and off ramps.
Yeah.
Right.
If there's even going to be an overcrossing because of cost, we don't know.
Well, the off ramp, that would also require a exemption, wouldn't it? From because it's too close, isn't it? Doesn't an off ramp have to be at least 1 mile from another off ramp?
There has to be a difference, and it is under the 1 mile.
Yeah.
But, you know, I always go back to Corona Road. It was built in, like, 1953, 1954.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not up to earthquake standards. It's not good for ADA. It's not good for people walking, people bicycling, and it's dangerous for cars.
It's scary.
And yet you have all this development that's happening at Brody Ranch. You have the apartments that are going to be built on the corner of Corona Road. And across the north of the Brody Ranch is actually the Scott property, which can be incorporated into the city for housing.
Hmm.
And so it's really important that you make that a safe route across town, because more and more people are going to be walking across town to go to Lombardi's.
Mm-hmm.
You actually have a trail down the river
mm-hmm.
that people can hook onto. And it's really an important east-west connection. And even though David Rabbit and I will disagree on this, I know you can get state and federal funds. I know at a time you could have, and it would have been paid with state and federal funds, because it's an existing road. It's a regional road. Unlike Rainier, that is a locally serving road, the city has to pay that 100%.
Yeah, well, when all that development is done and we have a gazillion more cars on the road, it's going to be worse than it is now. If you ever try to use the Corona roundabout at 8 o'clock in the morning, it is a freaking mess. And now that we have all these extra homes, what is it, 180 units alone on Brody Ranch, and then we're looking at all those apartments, and then the train station.
And we hope the train station's there. That is still not solidified.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, as an Eastsider, that is where the rail station needs to go.
Yeah,
I mean, we do not need it down by Old Redwood Highway. Eastsiders need a rail station, and that is the perfect place for one.
Now, is this still the, we're talking about that corner lot that's on Corona and North McDowell? Is that
the corner lot? And right now they're actually doing mitigations for, gasoline, for contamination.
So this is currently where all those big trucks and things are, and a lot of campaign signs on the corner.
To have that campaign signs on that corner, you have to have permission, because somebody actually took mine off. And I had to call to get it back because those are expensive signs.
Yeah.
And
you do have to ask permission before you put signs up.
This area was always different. People were always able to put signs up. It was never a problem until the change in real estate people.
Right.
And who they chose to support over others.
So when I ran, I remembered I had to ask. They were hosting signs for everybody. But then there was a skirmish between the couple I think the wife didn't want the signs and the husband was okay with them. I don't know. That was several years ago, so I don't know what the current sign status is now. Interesting location for the station. It seems like it makes sense. I don't know. I can't think of necessarily a better one in that area.
Well, sometimes, I mean, in retrospect, except it's an area that floods, it would be great where the Deer Creek is.
Oh.
Go under the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
You could catch the rail right there. But because of the flood, it's in a floodplain.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that's possible. But, boy, it would have been a really great place because it would have been more in the middle of the north and south part of our town.
Mm-hmm.
And, it would be great to get out and just walk over to the rail station, hop on and do what you need to do, where now a lot of people are going to actually have to drive to the Corona site. But that's okay.
Except me. I can walk.
Except you. Exactly.
I live next to the Brody.
Right.
Imagine if we had trams like other cities have. I mean, I lived in Holland for a couple of years, and I didn't have to own a car at all. It was just so easy to get around.
Well, there was a site, on Facebook. It's not the Isla Petaluma site. It's a site for people that grew up here.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about these jitney buses.
Uh-huh.
And when I was young, you had a jitney bus, and you would get on that, and it would take you around the town. And so it's kind of similar. And now we have regular buses, and they don't seem to run enough. But at least we have buses. But in my day, it was called the jitney bus.
So what a perspective. You've seen so much change in Petaluma. I mean, just since 2000, I've seen quite a bit. But the character's really changed, hasn't it?
Well, the character's really changed. And when I was growing up, Hamilton Field was, Novato.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of World War II, Korean vets were there. And then a lot of those people were getting out of the service, and they moved to Petaluma.
Mm-hmm.
So East Petaluma, was basically for newer people coming into our community. So it was a good thing. We knew that housing was going to come.
Mm-hmm.
In retrospect, it could have been done a little bit differently, more community.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of goes back to Deer Creek as
mm-hmm.
being community.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if that site had had heavy housing,
mm-hmm.
Apartment housing,
mm-hmm.
and had retail, and some medical facilities,
mm-hmm.
I think you would have had an area that more people could have congregated. I would have loved to have had a movie theater there.
Fun.
And unfortunately, when Basin Street, did the downtown, there's an exemption that the east side cannot have a movie theater.
Hmm.
But yet that would have been a perfect place for a movie theater. It would have been a place where people could really congregate.
Hmm.
And it's not that type of a center, but it's what it is, and you learn to live with it. But I just want to briefly talk about the bridges there.
Mm-hmm.
After there was a company called DSL purchased the property, they quit plowing the field. And all of a sudden, I noticed that there was a real creek that was going through that field. 7 years I took pictures of that creek, and I wrote to the Corps of Engineers. I wrote to every agency weekly with photos. And that's why that those bridges are there. And that creek was saved.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I have them right here on my
and they,
you can see all the
photos. And they didn't name those bridges after you?
I don't think that was ever a thought. You know, sometimes it's not having things named after you. It's being proud of things that are done and knowing that they were really successful.
You had an impact. I ride my bike over those bridges all the time.
Yeah. You know, I always think about the Washington intersection.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I ran on, was redoing the Washington intersection back in the 90s. And because it was four lanes and it was a rickety road, and I knew that as development happened, you had to improve that intersection to make traffic flow.
Right.
And the northbound on-ramp was also a vision of mine and Madeline Ash. And it was 2012, the northbound on-ramp was finally done. The intersection was finished by 2003 or 4, I believe. And it is the most efficient intersection in this entire town. And once the northbound on-ramp got in, you have a lot less bunching up of cars because there used to be a left-hand turn lane to get onto the freeway. So with traffic, it's incremental changes that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be done economically. And it's really about moving traffic. It's not about speeding through town because we're never going to speed through town again.
Yeah, I still avoid that intersection at all costs.
It's my favorite.
That's why I'm on I use Corona. That's my crosstown connector.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And so that's my gripe, is that Corona should be improved to accommodate people like me who would prefer to go that way.
I think there's a lot more people like you than the community really realizes. And if you can get state and federal funds, then that's even better.
This is maybe a little tongue-in-cheek to some extent, but I will say that we have a really good crosstown connector that never has any traffic. It's called the Lynch Creek Trail.
That's right.
And I have to say, I need to ride it more often, because I can basically take that path right from downtown Petaluma to pretty much where my office is without hardly interacting with another automobile. It's a really great trail if you've never gone on the Lynch Creek Trail. Now, having said that, it's been in the news. There's been some issues there. There's some people that are, I guess, involved in some sorts of drug dealings and things like this. So it's getting a little bit more policed. And I only say that simply if you're going out there on the Lynch Creek Trail, maybe not walking all by yourself at night, but otherwise, I mean, it's a great path, and it's along the way. There's a bit of trash that's getting cleaned up, thankfully, by volunteers. I mean, but otherwise, it's a really a beautiful
path.
That's
my crosstown connector on bike.
And there's no traffic.
I ride as fast as hell through there.
Timed it. I did this just to find out. So my wife left at the same time. She didn't give me a head start. She's ahead of me. I'm riding my bike. She starts to slow down. I say, no, go your normal pace. She beat me by about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
But that was when there wasn't much traffic. When there's actually traffic, I've timed it myself, and that can take, I live up the top of B Street, so for me to get there can take 20 minutes or so. But on my bike, it's just about 15 minutes. And the hill on the way back is kind of a pain.
That's okay.
But that's my own issues of getting in better shape. Anyway, Lynch Creek Trail, I would say an underutilized crosstown connector that we ought to consider more when we're trying to get cars off the road and decrease traffic and be a little bit more healthy.
It's good for your health is what it really is.
Except when there's smoke from the fire. Well, so check, pay attention to those spare the air days.
Smoke has been bad.
Okay, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back in just a few. Thank you. KPCA 103.3 FM right here in Petaluma. If you're streaming, you're probably not in Petaluma, and you would ask, why would anybody want to stream inside Petaluma from outside? Well, look at all the people that actually move away from Petaluma but still subscribe to the Argus Courier. People are still interested in what's going on here, so that's why we would have
streams. It's an interesting town.
Well, the other thing is a lot of people don't listen to terrestrial radio. They're in front of their computers all day, and it's much easier to go online stream. So I think we have a lot of people in Petaluma that are just listening through their computers. It's a good thing.
I think it's a good thing.
So what do we talk about now?
Let's see.
How about talk about Lakeville? That seems to be the pulse of Petaluma.
Ooh.
Discussion last week.
Had a lot of tragic situations on that.
Yeah. The poll says Lakeville Highway is the new Blood Alley.
Mm.
I quit driving. My daughter lives in Davis, and I decided a few years ago that I was not going to drive Lakeville at night because I just didn't feel safe. The trucks are driving too fast, too many cars on the road now, and it's just a dangerous road. And I've actually been part of the Highway 37 or been following that committee.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're talking about, Lakeville. They're talking about the flooding out on 37. Mm-hmm. They're also talking about putting a toll road between to Vallejo from 37. And so there's a lot of discussion that people should really be aware of what's going on Lakeville. It's not just what's happening in Petaluma.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually the entire corridor connecting all the way to Vallejo.
Well, because part of that, it's 37, right?
Correct.
That's predicted to be underwater if it doesn't get raised because of, we've got global warming and seawater rising. So I know that's a big challenge, and funding is a big issue, and I think that's partly why some people are talking about tolls or even privatization.
Well, it's actually a privatized toll road. Mm. Which is a concern for me, because
absolutely.
How do you actually have the ability to, what are the tolls going to be?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people move to Fairfield, Vacaville, and they commute into the Bay Area.
Right.
And they're living there because they can't afford to live here.
Exactly.
So I'm always really thoughtful of what it's going to cost somebody to be commuting now.
Mm-hmm.
My preference would be the train. You know, have a really good train system.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that is long-term, sustainable, and that's the direction I'd like to see it going, but it's not going to go that way, so we have to realize that we're going to end up with a bridge. It's probably going to be a toll bridge from what I'm hearing from the supervisors,
mm-hmm.
and we have to deal with underwater.
Great.
Well, it's a shame that BART didn't pan out the way we had thought it would when I was a kid, because I remember the maps where it was going to be a whole network of trains that were going to connect the north with the East Bay and the South Bay, and it's a shame. At least we have SMART, but
there wasn't, you know, one thing about Petaluma, and I still see this, is that we're back in 1960s and 70s thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I go back to the Deer Creek Center and I go to the Target Center.
Mm-hmm.
They're more like strip malls.
Mm-hmm.
Deer Creek is just a prettier strip mall.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really would have looked at those, and the city is not getting the revenue that they projected for either of those centers.
Right.
What a surprise.
What a surprise. Not a surprise to some of us, but.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that the Target site is actually sold now. So a new developer has purchased it, and I'm going to be watching to see how they're going to redevelop that center that was built in the 1960s and 70s strip mall,
mm-hmm.
instead of incorporating housing in there. As an example, where BevMo is, that should have been closer to the street.
Mm-hmm.
If Friedman's had been there, you wouldn't have had as many truck trips on McDowell tearing up the road. It's not against having people, you know, businesses coming in. It's
mm-hmm.
about smarter thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of goes back to when we're talking about BART.
Mm-hmm.
Sonoma County was very backwards in their thinking, not wanting to bring BART to Sonoma County.
Mm.
And if they had, we would be a completely different county than we are now. We'd be more like Silicon Valley. I mean, we'd have a lot more housing, more like Berkeley, a lot more housing than we have now.
Mm.
But you would have had great transportation. But it was really short-sighted thinking is why BART isn't up in this area. And the smart train will never be a BART system.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see how it pans out financially.
When I talk to people about smart, the biggest thing people will say is, but it doesn't connect to San Francisco. But actually, if you look at the smart website, it really isn't intended for that. I mean, I know they're now going to, I guess the funding is going to be there to expand to Larkspur so that people will do the ferry connection if they like. But the main people that it's serving, and that was by design, are people in Sonoma and Marin County. And that, my understanding is it's actually worked pretty well for commuters within these two counties. I don't know what the numbers are. I'd have to go look. But
I don't want to be able to go to the city.
Yeah, I know. Well,
you can still take a bus to the city.
There's
you get off at a bus transit. Mm-hmm. It's really learning how to move differently. We're so used to cars. It's really hard to shift from...
The ferry is a blast.
Yeah, that's...
It just takes time.
Right.
You've got to add that time for the connection. It's timed pretty well, I understand. If you do take that connection from SMART, it kind of ends up where it's meeting when the ferry is going to leave. It's a different pace, though, and you kind of have to plan for it, and you obviously don't want to get stuck in the city because there's, at a certain point, there's no ferries to take you back.
Yeah, and then you have to get on a bus. And
right. Or an Uber.
Right. Exactly. There's some drawbacks.
I want to go to a ball game, so I'm hurry up. Get down to the Larkspur Ferry Terminal.
Well, that's, I think, within a couple of years.
What year is that? Mm-hmm. When
is it 2012? Who knows now? 2020? I don't know. But I thought the funding was available.
Yes, yeah, that's correct. I just don't know how soon it's going to happen. Yeah,
right, right. But it's hindsight is interesting. To view.
Have we all taken this? I haven't ever been on the SMART. Have you guys been on it?
I have.
I'm kind of embarrassed to say I've been an advocate for it. I voted for it. I'm not a commuter, so I don't have a commute reason to do it. I work here in town. But my daughter's taken it a few times, and she has a blast. They'll go to Santa Rosa, San Rafael, go to some restaurants, things like that. I'd rather that they shop here in Petaluma, but, you want to explore and see things. So it's a great thing also for kids that it's much safer, I think, than them driving.
That's true.
I'm a little nervous about that, but anyway.
Well, in my days, we would take the bus to Santa Rosa. Yeah.
But I'm going to do it. I'm going to take the SMART because I haven't done it yet. I'm interested to see what it's like. I use rail all the time when I'm in Europe or when I go to Japan. I'm a huge advocate of rail, and, of course, I do need to try it. Did you like it?
I do. I loved it. Yeah. It's interesting because you get to see parts of the county between Sonoma and Marin that you don't
see from the road,
from the freeway.
Yeah.
So, but as I understand it, some of the residents there aren't real happy about the train going through their backyard. But
the horns are loud. I know there's sometimes complaints about that, but then of course we don't want people getting killed.
Well, we have quiet zones now. So
yes.
I live. Like I said, I live near the Corona roundabout, mm-hmm. so the horn was very loud, especially at 4 a.m., and now that we have quiet zones, I do worry a little bit about accidents happening.
Well, there was just an accident recently that happened. A woman was killed who was walking on the tracks, and apparently there's... fair number of homeless encampments.
Well, weren't they calling that a suicide?
They are saying now that they think it was a suicide.
Yeah. Sounds like both of there was two times
but,
suicide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad because they were both women. And so you're wondering, is it a financial? Were they homeless? I mean, what was their background? And, and that kind of goes back to, there was an article in the paper today about Section 8 housing in the Press Democrat.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, there's a woman, she worked at a standard gas station for 26 years, and she's losing her Section 8 housing.
Mm-hmm.
So she's going to have to leave the county, and she's looking at moving to Clear Lake. Another woman is looking at moving up to Washington to be closer to a family member. But it's a real – housing is a real problem.
Yeah.
And you look at people that can't afford to live in a place – this woman has lived in her place, I think, 15 or 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
Her life is just shattered because she has to move, and – And then you kind of wonder, you know, why are people committing suicide?
Mm.
I mean, that's another topic for another day.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's a big one.
Yeah, it's a big one. But, you know, I really worry about women and their solvency. So,
well, there's
and families and men, too.
There's a lot of stuff to be concerned and depressed about in this era of Trump, I will say. I feel comfortable saying that, a lot of people are upset about what's going on. Yeah, we're not going to get into the whole suicide thing here.
Yeah.
But if you do have someone who's depressed, try to help them and be there for them.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I have been on the SMART train once. I went down to Marin because I had to take my car to the Subaru dealer.
Mm-hmm.
I had to keep it longer than I needed.
Oh, that's a good application.
It was great. So it ended up that I got a ride home with Uber. But then I took the train back to pick up my car, and so I could just walk there. But what I found out was the employees at Marin Subaru, a lot of them live in Sonoma County in Petaluma.
Yeah.
Oh.
And they take the train, and then either the dealership picks them up or they can just walk. And, I mean, it was like a 15-minute walk.
Yeah.
And so I think it's definitely worth trying.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I'm going to use it all the time. I don't have that need.
Yeah, you're not the intended customer.
Exactly, but it was really very convenient when I realized I could just go ahead and get on the train to go back to pick up my car.
Yeah.
I think the schedule needs, eventually we're going to have more trains and more train schedules, which will be a good thing.
And you can have a glass of wine and not have to worry about driving.
Well, that's
true. You can get work done. You can sleep.
Exactly.
You don't have to be focused and driving.
Right.
There's a lot to be said for public transit in general, but Smart Rail, I'll have to try it.
Yeah. So we kind of got lost on the Lakeville subject.
We did.
Were we done with that?
Well, I want to just give a little bit of history on the Lakeville project.
Yeah.
The big bridge, going over.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle built that.
Oh.
It was.
Wait, which bridge are you talking about?
Well, actually, he built the Petaluma River Bridge that was just replaced. But
oh,
he built the bridge, the Napa Bridge, or the Napa Bridge.
Yeah.
The large Napa Bridge, he built that, but he also built the bridge where Mare Island was.
Is there anything in your family that's not related to Petaluma?
Actually, Uncle Art wasn't from Petaluma, but it was Philip Weisberg and Erickson Philip Weisberg Company. And I have these old articles that I happened to be looking at yesterday about how they built these structures.
Wow.
And he actually was in the World War II, and what he was, he built tarmacs for planes coming in. You know, you had to build them very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting when you look at that era of people. They built things to last.
Mm-hmm.
And yet today we're trying to engineer things to last, but yet these men in the time, that's what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And watching how the structure, how they were built is amazing. And I wanted to talk about Memorial Hospital. There was a man, Ben Oretzky. He was a big contractor with Wright and Oretzky in Sonoma County. And at his service, they talked about when he was in Memorial Hospital at the end of his life, he commented to a nurse that he knows that in an earthquake, that hospital will never come down because of the way he built it. And he was the same era as my uncle.
Mm-hmm.
They just built things really to last.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think people get enough credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we look at the Empire State Building.
Mm-hmm.
We look at all these buildings in San Francisco. They haven't fallen down. They were built to last.
Knock on wood.
Well, that's exactly.
I just read an article recently that a lot of this stuff actually it was not quite up to standards in the earthquake that we're expecting. We've been lucky.
Right.
Back to Lakeville. There is some work being done on trying to improve a section of it to put a divider. Isn't that correct? I did see that in the paper.
I don't know that.
No.
Yeah.
No. I think the article that I saw in the paper had to do with the section there in front of Kaiser Permanente.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
That's
what I'm talking about.
Were you talking
about? Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And to put actually a stoplight there so people can get in and out safely.
A stoplight?
I thought that's what it said, but I mean, I could be wrong. I read the article and I didn't reread it, but I thought they were going to do something so people can get in and out of that intersection safer, which would
But is that the section where most of the accidents are happening on? I thought it was kind of further.
Yeah, I don't have the article in front of me. They did quote numbers.
Okay.
And
okay.
The numbers were rising annually.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's the entire section. I don't think it's one place or really another. But what it is, it's too much traffic, and people are not driving slow enough.
And the fact that Kaiser Permanente has taken on so many more members that's
very true
that,
too.
That site can't even accommodate the number of members that they have, whereas that used to be the place you'd go because it was quiet and not crowded.
You also get kind of a fog layer there sometimes, so the visibility isn't all that great.
Right.
So there's a lot of factors. People driving too fast, people that are driving it, a lot of them are fatigued. Mm-hmm. You've got the factors of visibility.
Distracted driving.
It's a narrow road.
It's an old road. It's not wide enough.
It needs a divider.
Yeah. But to put a divider down means you probably have to widen the road. Mm-hmm. So it's more complicated. It's easy to say we have to do this.
Right.
But then you really have to get into the engineering. And that's what I always enjoyed most. Mm-hmm. It's fun to talk about projects, but I always like to get into, okay, what's the cost of the project? How do you accomplish the project? There's just more to a project than what's in a newspaper article.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of time, and people will say government's really slow. That's true. Government's slow. If you had money, it would go a heck of a lot faster.
Well, the same people that say that are the first ones to complain if something's done poorly without enough thought. You can't win in government.
No, you can't. You can't at all. It's interesting. You know, we have a new person running for mayor, and I was, kind of looking on his, Facebook site, and he's definitely anti-government.
Hmm.
It's really interesting to see.
There's another candidate for mayor?
Yeah, there's another candidate for mayor. His name's Brian Powell. And he seems to be very anti-government.
Three candidates.
Yeah, so there's three now. And so it's interesting to, to start researching, finding out who he is.
Mm-hmm.
What party does he belong to? Mm-hmm. I'd like to know what every candidate's party they belong to.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's really a perfect example when you get people that are kind of angry and running for office because they're angry.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how the Tea Party started. Mm-hmm. You got all these angry people that started at the school board level and then the city council level. And now they're in Washington, D.C., making those decisions for myself, my body, my children's body, my future, my religion. Mm-hmm. And so you always have to be very careful when you're starting to look at candidates. It's really, I don't believe that it's a nonpartisan race. I believe it's very partisan, and it should be.
Yeah.
Even though, quote, it's nonpartisan, I want to know what someone believes, because if they end up going to Washington, D.C. for me, I want to make sure it's somebody that believes in good values.
Well, that's a good point, because a lot of people, a lot of people run for council for different reasons, and some people are doing it because they care about their city. Some people get into it because they have aspirations for higher office. And sometimes the two aren't mutually exclusive. And I'm not suggesting that anyone who has aspirations for higher office therefore doesn't care about their community. But I think it's important when you're looking at, potential trajectory of some of these candidates, what their vision is, where their values are, and where they're going. Because a lot of people use the council as a stepping stone for higher office, where partisanship really does come into play. And, of course, it does come into play at the local level. You just don't normally see a party attached to it, but you definitely see the value. And, there's definitely the candidates that tend to be more inclined to protect the public interest tend to be ones that are endorsed by the Democratic Party. It just sort of goes there. They tend to be endorsed by environmental organizations, things like that. The ones that maybe they call themselves independent, if you look at that other side of it, they tend to side on business interests and development interests over public interests. And again, it gets back to money, too. You can sometimes figure that out just based on where the donations are coming from. But I agree. I think people should be open about what their political philosophies are, and that's embodied in their party. And if they say, you know, I'm not, I'm an independent. You can also find out who they voted for, because that's a reflection. Where were they in the last presidential election? Who did they vote for? Because that's an indicator of where their values are, and it has a direct impact on decision-making at the local level.
That's right. That's disclosure is everything.
Yeah, and
transparency only makes sense.
Exactly.
And we have, looks like, 2 minutes left before we need to sign off. And in closing, I just want to say that I thought this was a great discussion today, and I'm looking forward to doing it more. We're going to be on the air every Friday from 11 to noon, talking it up for you guys, and you've been listening to Inside Petaluma. I'm Cindy Thomas, and I'm here with co-hosts Jason Davies and Janice Cater Thompson. And what do you say, guys?
I just want to thank you. I'm really enjoying this. It was a great conversation.
It's always great talking with you guys.
Yeah.
And, you guys, sorry.
Yeah.
I need to fix that one.
Okay, and coming up is Two Mucks and a Mic with Matt McGuire and Jim Thomas, and we're looking at them through the glass window right now. They're anxious to get in here, so we're going to sign off and make sure you come back. Like I said, we're here on Thursdays. I'm sorry. That's my other show.
Friday.
That's my other show.
That's your other show.
Yes, I do. Let's Jam with Cindy Thomas every Thursday night from 7 to 9. So if you want to hear some good rock and music, 7 to 9 on Thursdays.
Awesome.
But in the meantime, join us on Fridays, 11 to noon, for Inside Petaluma. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
KPCALP, Petaluma, California.
Hi, this is Ed Perlstein, your host for Jazz. To make the perfect jazz cocktail, you take some John Coltrane, mix in a bunch of Miles Davis, and a pinch of Herbie Hancock. Shake and enjoy. Get Jazz every Monday at 4 p.m. on KPCA 103.3 FM or www.kpca.fm online.
Are you tired of the mainstream tunes that other stations play over the airwaves? I'm sure you crave more diversity. Free Range Radio KPCA just might be the station for you. We host local producers that play anything from contemporary jazz to R&B to surf music. Tune in on 103.3 FM and online at kpca.fm.
Hey now, Cindy Thomas here on Petaluma's homegrown radio station. I've always got a really tight show rolled up with some of your favorite jam and rock nuggets, both old and new. I love playing live tracks that pull you into the moment, so join me there. Tune in Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m. on KPCA 103.3 FM or stream us live at kpca.fm. Let's jam.
Are you looking for an alternative to the usual political punditry? With Free Range Radio KPCA, look no further. Given the day of the week, local programmers delve into such topics as Pilates, mental health, and even independent journalism, with guests that evoke honest and open discussions. Tune in at 103.3 FM or online at kpca.fm.
KPCALP, Petaluma, California.